a day.
So that's final, huh, Fred?
Yeah, I'm afraid so, kiddo.
Oh, Fred.
Yeah.
Nobody walks out on me.
That was All That Jazz and the Overture to Chicago. The singing was done by my guest, Cheetah Rivera, who's in Philadelphia performing at the Burgundy Room, which is the supper club in the Fairmont Hotel. She's doing a show of music and dance conceived and directed by John Kander and Fred Ebb, and that's the team who wrote the music and lyrics for the scores of Cabaret and Chicago. About, I guess, 23 years ago, Cheetah Rivera starred as Anita in the Broadway version of West Side Story. She soon played in another hit, Bye Bye Birdie, where she played opposite Dick Van Dyke in the role of Rose. Her most recent Broadway success has been in Bob Fosse's musical Chicago, where she co-starred with Gwen Verdon. She'll be returning to Broadway, I understand, soon for an updated version of Bye Bye Birdie, where all the characters are featured 20 years later. Welcome to Fresh Air. It's great to meet you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. It's always so funny to hear people read down the credits and things. You just sort of sit there, and sometimes they bring up things that you've forgotten about. You say, oh, yes, that's right. I did do that, didn't I? It's nice to be here.
You've been performing on Broadway off and on for over 20 years now.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Has there been dramatic changes in the Broadway scene, as far as you can tell?
There have been many changes. You know, when I first... Let's see, I came to New York to join the New York City Ballet Company, so that was a dramatic change in my life when I auditioned for Jerome Robbins for a show called Call Me Madam. It was the national company I had auditioned for, and I got it. And that was the wonderful time of the Oklahomas and the big choruses, the big dancing choruses, the big singing choruses, where they all came downstage and they got on one knee and they sang these wonderful notes, and it was just glorious. And there were only microphones at the footlights. There was nothing attached to your body that you had to carry on your back, in your back pocket. So it was wonderful. So that there's been a change as far as sound. Recently, I noticed it very, very seriously in the revival of West Side, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And when we did it, we had only the apparatus that was on the stage. I noticed in the overture, I missed, because of the electronic sounds today that we're really just used to, I missed the power that you get when you turn on your phonograph, and you can have the sound as loud and as dramatic and as high as you want it. I missed it. I really did, you know. I thought the sound was kind of low-key. How they could have fixed it, I guess, was by maybe putting more mics in the pit or something like that. Maybe that wasn't true with other people, but I know that I missed it, and I'm pretty ordinary when it comes to the theater. I mean, I'm kind of old-fashioned when I say ordinary. Old-fashioned. So it surprised me. So there is a change in sound. There's a change in style. We went through a stage of the Irma La Douce's and the Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, and the smaller shows we did that David Merrick mostly produced. And that was kind of a nice time. We were a little worried about that time because a lot of dancers and singers were put out of work. There weren't as many jobs because the shows were not as big. The dancing seems to be coming back. We noticed it with Chorus Line in Chicago, that, thank God, dancing is coming back to the theater. Original shows recently. There are not a lot of original musicals that have been happening in the past few years. I kind of think we missed that. It's wonderful to have the revivals, though, because why not have those wonderful shows brought back and you might be reminded of them, because I want to see them again. Unfortunately, I think the reason for it is because they're not, the expense of theater tickets now is just so, it's just so much. I don't like it as a performer. I think it's killing us.
Well, there was a time when Broadway was really struggling. I remember just reading article after article about how no one was buying tickets. This was, what, in the late 60s, early 70s, maybe. Did that affect you personally, that period when Broadway was struggling?
What happened to me, I've really been very lucky, but then you have a tendency to kind of forget those hard days. At least my type of person does. I have a daughter. I was bringing up Lisa. I moved to California for 7 years. Reason being, I went out to do the movie Sweet Charity. Liked it out there. Liked it mainly because I wanted to bring Lisa up in another place other than New York at that time, you know. So our lifestyle changed for 7 years. I was away from the city for 7 years and missed it desperately. I mean, I'm a New York person, I discovered. I've got to live in that city. So I was, and also just before I moved and at that crunch at that time, I had discovered that I was getting work in the middle of the country. In other words, they were having winter stock. Instead of, there was one time it was just called summer stock. Now it was winter stock, which is good. I mean, it allows the rest of the country to have theater, which is exactly, fortunately, what's being done now. And so I was doing the winter stock. So I was leaving New York all the time and leaving my home and not happy about it, but that's where the work was. So when I decided to move to California, I found out I was doing the same thing from California, you know, instead of doing a lot of things there, because it was only just the Dorothy Chandler and the Amundsen and not a lot of theaters in L.A. I was going back to the middle of the country in Chicago and other areas and doing shows, you know, back and forth from there. So after my 7 years and I realized I really wanted to come back, and I did, and I came back with Chicago. But during the time that you asked, I was in California. You know, so it was not as busy, but I was doing things I would never have done had that not happened. I found myself doing straight plays, Tennessee Williams, and wonderful things. I guess maybe, I don't know what I would, you know, if I ever would have done them.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some of the shows that you've been in. I'd like to hear a little bit about West Side Story. When you were first looking at your part and first assessing what West Side Story was going to be like, what did you think? What were those initial impressions of the show?
Well, you know, it's funny because when you're in something, first of all, the auditions were very long. There was a lot of auditions, a lot of people, and I think I took 7. And I think that was the least amount of most, you know, of Carol and Larry and all of us. All right, finally got it. Now you get your script and you read it. My first feeling was a very odd one because it was not a show that there had never been anything like it. It seemed very dark. I'd been used to that, ta-da, at the end, you know, that up thing. Most people had been, and it was very serious, and the problem was happening. It was then and there, right in your backyard. So, I mean, we were not political about it. It was just that we were aware that, and you never know how people are going to react, but you are a performer, so that's what you're thinking about. You're thinking about how you're going to portray this character. I did look at the last scene, and I went, You can't end a show with a dead body over. I mean, this is a musical. This is not a play. A dead body is being carried with the chimes going on and is being carried over the head. And I went, they'll never be able to do this. I just know they won't. Well, I'm fooling with geniuses here, you know, Jerome Robbins and Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim and Arthur Lawrence. What you do, and I believe what I do, you put yourself in the hands of these men who really know what they're doing. And if you do, you're pretty safe. So we got into the play. What Jerry did do was, there was unfortunately a man who's been released now because he served his term. It was a terrible gang war in a playground just down the road. And I live in the country now. Now I'm saying down the road, down the street, and in a playground. And so he cut this article out, and this poor, he was very young. He had just killed this kid, and he was called Dracula, and he had a cape, and it was... So it said, Jerry had at the bottom of the bulletin board, this is your life. Well, it wasn't really until that moment that we realized it really was out in the street. What we were doing really was happening. And it kind of scared us, but it made us even more intense. And we needed exactly that to make this thing really pop and make it real. So it was a fantastic, fantastic experience. But being on the inside of something, you never really think about what it looks like from the outside. You're too busy living it, you know. So when we got our first audience reaction, it was a shock. It was almost a shock that we were doing a show. It was so much of our life because it was the first show that ever had 6 or 7 weeks of rehearsal, too. Usually only had 4. And we came into that theater. We lived, we breathed, we ate, we did everything. That theme, that story. You know what I mean? The Jets and the Sharks didn't even speak at lunch.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a fascinating situation.
Was that encouraged by
yes,
the director?
Yes, absolutely. Because we were dancers. We had to think entirely different. We had to be different people because dancers had a tendency only to think that they were physical beings, not thinking beings, even though dancing is acting. Dancing is a true form of acting without words. You can convey what you have to say, your feelings and everything, without a word, which is a very pure and beautiful form. You know, so but you don't realize that. You just dance until someone brings it to your attention.
You're talking about the separation between the Jets and the Sharks during lunch. Did you, who do not have a Spanish accent now, start speaking with one while you were out on your break?
No, I'm not crazy.
Just wondering.
No, some people, no, and I didn't mean to be smart by saying I'm not crazy. Because some actors do. They get so involved with their character but I think that's a choice they make, you know, to work on it. And I don't take it that much home, you know. During the rehearsal, the working hours, you do. I didn't speak. Well, yes, we did. Yes, I did have an accent in West Side. I did use an accent. I'd forgotten.
In the dance sequences, how did Jerome Robbins teach you the steps, teach you the dances?
Well, we would go into rehearsal, first of all, and then we'd have a bar. You know, we'd have 45 minutes of ballet bar. And then we would sit down, and he'd ask us questions as those characters. For instance, he would say to me, when did you come to this country? When was your father and mother? Where did they meet? What part of Puerto Rico were they from? Who's your best friend in the gang? How do you feel about Bernardo? What is it, you know, very intimate so that you get some feeling of a person that you have to portray, which is absolutely sensational. It was the greatest experience for us. We were all very fortunate people. So then it was magnificent. I only wish every dancer could have gone through this experience, because people also say, aren't you sorry you didn't do the movie? No. If there was a choice I had between the two, to be there when something is given birth to, when it's created, when you see it come out of that man's head, when you hear it come from the fingers of Leonard Bernstein, you know, and you know it's just happening there in front of you, it's really, you can't beat that. So Jerry Robbins would work on something with Howard Jeffries, who was one of his assistants, and sometimes say to me, Cheetah, look at this. And the one moment I remember distinctly was the moment that Tony and Maria, Romeo and Juliet, meet in the dance hall, the very first moment they meet. And it's done to a cha-cha, which is a certain, you know, rhythm and dance. And they never touch. And the steps were choreographed so delicately and so gently that you got completely the feeling of these two people that were drawn to one another but were never allowed to touch. And you could see the elasticity. You could see that thing in the middle. That's Jerome Robbins for you, I mean. And I saw it. He said, Cheetah, how does this look to you? Well, it brought tears to my eyes because and everyone could see it, you know. You could completely understand it without the words.
Did the choreography seem daring to you at the time?
It seemed not daring because it was basically ballet. It was wonderful to see men dance like that. Strong. Pressured. The feeling of the violence of the street was there. The competition was there. We had a sensational time because Peter Gennaro assisted Jerome Robbins. And he did a lot of the Latin, the Puerto Rican things. And it was also very smart of Jerome Robbins to do that, you know, because it was a large piece to do. And it was nice to have other flavors. And Peter Gennaro was very gifted in that area. And so, because Jerry also went up to certain areas in Harlem, in Spanish Harlem, and went to the dance halls. I mean, he saw how they did it. He really saw it. But Jerry would take the Jets into a rehearsal hall. And then he would tell Peter to take the Sharks into a rehearsal hall. We would tell no one what we were going to do, right? It was fabulous. Then we would come, back into the one big room, and it was the dance hall, if you recall the scene at all. It was a scene about these two, you know, competitive teams who really disliked each other, and they were trying to take over, so they would surprise each other with something, you know. And that's exactly what happened in rehearsal. The music started, and we would start to dance, and then all of a sudden the other kids would do something, and they would take our attention away from what we were doing, and they won it. So it went back and forth, and so it was created exactly the way it came off. It was a lot of fun to do that, really a lot.
Was being in West Side Story a situation that dramatically changed your life?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Well, I met my first husband. I have not been married since, but my one and only husband. I'm divorced now. I had my Lisa during West Side Story. And that's a lifetime in itself. Yes, I mean, to be a part of a classic, a great American classic like that, you're a very fortunate person to have been chosen. I'd sung before that. I had sung in a couple of shows before that. So that was, it was the first dramatic role. It was the first role that I had ever been able to sing and dance and act dramatically in. The very next show was Birdie, which was like if you took a nickel and flipped it, you know, the other side of the coin was Bye Bye Birdie. You know, it wasn't a problem in that except kids on the phone too long, you know. But Yes. I got married and I had a daughter during that time.
I'd like to play from the Broadway cast recording your duet with Carol Lawrence. It's a really great piece. I really love it. Can you tell us a little bit about the chemistry between you when you were working this out?
Yeah, that was wonderful. Carol is a very gifted lady. And she was a beautiful Maria, very sensitive and very, how can I say? She was very open and very young at the beginning of her portrayal of Maria. And she clearly learned later on in the play that she could only exist in this terrible situation that she was in by learning how to defend herself exactly the way she had to be forced to. And she really did do it brilliantly. That last scene she did was sensational. In this scene, it's one of my favorite scenes. I discover that she has taken in the fella that she loves, Tony, and has forgiven him for killing her brother, who was my boyfriend. And I can't understand it. I just can't understand how she's forgiven him. And in this song, she tells me that love is the only thing that matters. And the world has forced this terrible thing to happen, the prejudices and the misunderstandings and the fears that people have because they don't understand other people and they don't understand situations. This particular subject really moves me deeply because the world unfortunately suffers desperately from the same thing. And she makes me understand it. She makes me understand that love is the only thing that matters and we must forgive. And she succeeds in the end, and I end up saying, when we both end up saying, singing, when love comes so strong, there is no right or wrong, your love is your life. And it also is one of the most beautiful melodies, and the harmony is just magnificent. We tried not to get applause at the end of that number. Fortunately, we were successful most of the time, because it was best not to get applause. It was best to have the audience sit and be taken by it rather than respond.
Let's hear this duet with Chita Rivera and Carol Lawrence.
A boy like that could kill your brother. Forget that boy and find another. One of your own kind, stick to your own kind. A boy like that will bring you sorrow. You'll meet another boy tomorrow. One of your own kind, stick to your own kind. A boy who kills cannot love. A boy who kills has no heart, and he's the boy who gets your love and gets your heart. Very smart, Maria, very smart. A boy like that wants one thing only, and when he's done, he'll leave you lonely. He'll murder your love, he murdered mine. Just wait and see, just wait, Maria, just wait and see. Isn't true, not for me. It's true for you, not for me. I hear your words and in my head I know they're smart. But my heart, Anita, but my heart.
A boy like that
knows
kill your brother.
And my heart,
get that boy and find
smart.
Another.
I'm his and everything.
Cheetah Rivera and Carol Lawrence, a duet from the Broadway cast recording of West Side Story. Cheetah Rivera is my guest in the studio. Well, after West Side Story, you went on to Bye Bye Birdie.
Yeah.
And now that's a production that's going to be updated soon. You'll be heading back towards Broadway.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Well, this should be an awful lot of fun. The first Birdie surprised us. You know, it was just nothing but laughs, you know, and the problems of what parents had to go through in the days of the 50s with the rock and roll singers, you know, and how the kids used to run away from home and sit on the telephone. There was a sensational number that Gower Champion choreographed called the Telephone Hour, where they just talked on the phone all day long, which was a problem I'm sure only American kids had, or parents had. But this is 20 years later. And this is, I did Birdie with Dick Van Dyke. And this is 20 years later, and it's now Rosie and Albert with their own kids and their problems today with their kids. It's a family, fun, crazy show. We hope it'll be, you know, like the first one. The script is really hilarious. The score written by Charles Strauss and Lee Adams, the same ones that wrote the very first one. They're writing the score, and also we had a character that was played by Dick Gauthier called Conrad Birdie, who was the Elvis Presley type character. And now, of course, you got your Conrad Birdie that's about 40 years old, you see, and he's not going to be the same. And we're trying to find him, and we end up finding him, and there are a couple of wonderful surprises for those that enjoyed the first Birdie and are looking forward to seeing another one. There are a couple of surprises that, you know, you can't give away because we're going to kind of expose them in the second one. But that we will have the Birdie character and our characters and our children. We have two kids. And we won't have Paul Lynn with us this time.
Dick Van Dyke will be in it?
Dick won't be with, no, Dick is doing Music Man now, I believe, in California. So Dick won't be with us. But we have somebody very, 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 very interesting and I'm excited about. But it's not up to me to announce who that person
right.
is yet. I would love to, but I can't.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Chicago, the Bob Fosse musical with music by Kander and Ebb.
Yeah.
That you were in. What was it like to work with Fosse? I've recently seen the movie All That Jazz, which is a fairly autobiographical, I guess, film. How did you find him as a choreographer to work with?
Oh, well, Bob Fosse is brilliant. I mean, his style is...
How would you describe his style?
Oh, wow. It's different. You know, nobody ever asked me to describe Bob Fosse's style. It's, well, first of all, his training is very extensive. I mean, he's worked with everybody, and he's a hoofer, and he's a vaudevillian, and Fosse can do everything. But his own personal style is kind of like, it's jazz, it's very hip, it's very, I don't know. I can't describe it. He loves little short movements. They're very sensual, extremely sensual.
Like a little shoulder movement.
Yeah, a lot of hands and angles. I would think an artist would love, and they do, to paint and sketch his characters because they always have these strange features about them. You know, the body is always in weird and wonderful positions. His rhythms are interesting too. He likes it's a mixture of New Orleans, you know, blues and rhythm and blues. You know, I don't know. It's difficult. It's difficult because Sweet Charity was quite different. You see, Sweet Charity was he used a lot of space in Charity. In Chicago, you're stuck to a closer spot on the stage, you know, you didn't use very much space.
Was his ego really hard to work with?
No, not at all.
No.
Oh gosh.
When
no.
you see the movie, you'll see.
Yeah,
the
I haven't.
Ego
I haven't
that
seen
the character
it.
There is.
Yeah.
With.
Yeah. No. I mean, not at all. Bobby at the time. Thank God we've got him now. But at the time, because you've seen the movie, he had had this, I mean, I was there when he didn't come back from lunch, and he had suffered a heart attack. And the show was postponed for 6 months, and he had his open heart surgery, and he came back, which is quite a remarkable feat for him. And also, it was meant to be. Chicago was clearly meant to be, because oddly enough, in 6 months, nobody got a job. You know, I mean, the same cast he put together was there 6 months later. And it wasn't because nobody was... Everybody said, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to wait, because people have to work. I had moved in from California, brought Lisa and gotten a new place to live, put her in a new school. So, you know, it was quite a shock to everybody. But it was a fabulous experience. And it was exceptionally wonderful for me, because one of my best friends and buddies and one of my... I have no idols, that's a silly word, but one of my favorite performers in the entire world is Gwen Verdon. I just think she's one of the greatest things the American theater's ever had, and I had a chance to share the same stage with her, you know, so that was an exciting thing for me. So it was hard, because we were nervous because of Bobby's health, but he made it, and it was an interesting show. A lot of college students really liked that show a lot and came back. It was very interesting. I learned a lot after I got out of it. I learned a lot, you know, when I saw it. Things that I didn't know or see or feel when I was inside, you know. When I looked at it, it was a different kind of thing.
You and Gwen Verdon during some of the numbers were wearing hardly anything. Did that ever bother you, being that physically exposed on stage?
Oh, well, let's see. I had on, that's funny you should say that. And you're so young.
Oh, I mean, no, I'm not saying it should bother you. I was just wondering.
No, but I mean, because I always thought, well, if I had been asked to just walk around in my bra and panties, I probably wouldn't like that, you know, to walk around in my bra and panties. But what I did wear was, bra and panties. It was a bra, but it was kind of like decorated a little bit, so I felt like it was...
A bathing suit.
A bathing suit, you know. And the only thing you don't like about it is that you can't eat much dinner, you know. You got to be constantly aware of your stomach and being, you know, nice and tight and looking good. But, no, I didn't feel naked at all. And besides, Pat Sipperod had designed a cute little pair of I don't know what they were called, because they wore them in those days in the 30s. What are chemises? Those little one-piece things. See, Gwen had a little tiny slip, the little short one, just covers her. What came down actually past her hips.
I think a chemise was something where instead of a waistline, there was like a line around the hip.
Uh-huh.
I think.
Uh-huh. I'm not sure either. I always liked hers better. Oh, a teddy. That's what it's called. It was a teddy, right. My brother just said that. I'll have you know. Oh, no, sorry. Marion did. Lady that does my clothes in my eye. A teddy is exactly what it's called.
What's a teddy?
A teddy is a little, it's a little short thing like pants, but they're longer than pants. They come down past your hip. And it's like lace, and it's very feminine and very attractive. I liked Gwen's better because it was one piece, you know. I didn't like my stomach out. But then in one of the numbers, I had to roll my stomach, which I can do very well. If you really want to learn how to do it, I can show you. I had to roll my stomach, and so, of course, you know, you could see it better with when your stomach is bare. I remember one time, this is a point of just silliness, we had a fabulous front light man. And he wanted to show me how good he was. And I had stuck a little stone in my navel just to keep Gwen interested, because she had to sit through one of my numbers, the whole thing. She just sit there and watch it. And I didn't want to bore her half to death, you know. So I would do little things. I stuck a little rhinestone in my navel so that when I rolled it, the reflection was from the light. Well, the light man pinpointed that spot. I don't know how the guy did it. Down so small that it got right on my belly button. And it was really kind of weird. The audience didn't know what was going on, but it made it kind of interesting for us. Just some of the things you do so that you don't get crazy when you have a hit, thank God.
We're almost out of time. I'd really like to hear a little bit about, before you leave, the show that you're doing now at the Fairmont.
Well, this is a mini Broadway show. I have two super guys, good-looking guys, dance. Oh, they really dance fabulously. They're Michael Sarecki and Leland Schwantes. And it's a conglomerate, it's a potpourri of some of the things I've done, some things today, you know, modern music today. It's a big, beautiful orchestra, full orchestra at the Fairmont. Lighting, costumes, special material by Fred Ebb and John Canner. Dancing. It's dancing and singing. I mean, if you don't like dancing, don't come. But if you don't like dancing, then maybe come and try it out, because it's meant to purely entertain. It's meant to make you really feel good. That's what it's all meant. It's meant to do. And it's meant to, if you want to go out and have a good time afterwards, you might want to do that, because it's nice to hear people say, "Wow, I had so much energy after your show. All I did was go out and dance all night long." So it's meant for that. So come on over. If you haven't come, come on over.
Oh, sounds great. Cheetah Rivera, it's been great to meet you
pleasure.
And to have you here. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Cheetah Rivera, and she's in Philadelphia performing at the Burgundy Room, the Supper Club, in the Fairmont Hotel. She'll be there through this week and through next.
Right.
And I wish you the best. I hope you enjoy your stay in Philadelphia.
Always
good
do.
Luck with the new birdie when it opens.
Thank you. Bye-bye.